C1AP. Number 16B.
So we had those two beasts, the first beast, medicine, symbolizing the belief of life in matter, the second beast, theology, the belief of truth in matter, and all that is only possible because people believe that there is intelligence in matter and that they have intelligence in matter in the brain. Because now comes the third point, and they caused all to receive a mark in their foreheads. Forehead was always the seat of intelligence, of thinking, of consciousness. And the number of the beast is the number of a man, namely 666. Now we know 6 is always a symbol for man, for the sixth day of creation. In the sixth day of creation, man was created. 6 was that symbol of man. Well, if we want to bring out really the highest sense of mortal manhood, we just put another 6 and another 6, so that it shows a great sense of mortal manhood. So that 666 is actually not a historical person, as they always try to find out. First they thought it was Nero, and later on perhaps somebody else, and then afterwards it was Napoleon, and then it was Hitler, and then it was Stalin, and then it was somebody else. You know, this is all nonsense. He is talking about generalities and not specialities. He's talking about qualities and not about people. He wanted to show that everyone that believes in that wrong basis, that there is life in matter, that there is truth in matter, and that there is intelligence in matter, is really defining himself as a mortal. That is mortality. That is the basis of mortality, just as you have it in the scientific statement of being. So it is a personalized, mortalized sense of man that is presented here. And now, what do we do with that whole situation? You can see a whole chapter here for the first time that only shows a negative sense of things. And now, this is now the inhabitor of the earth and the sea, and woe to him. Now, is he damned forever? Is there eternal damnation? Is there everlasting punishment? And the revelator, naturally, who was talking to at his time about the Christ, the Word and the Christ, he has to show, no, there is always a way out. That even if you are believing that you are the 666, that you are a mortal, there is a way out. What is the way out? What shall you do? And the next chapter opens up an answer. So we go to chapter 14, which gives a great sense, as you have it here, of Christianity as Christianity, namely showing the picture of true manhood. After having shown the wrong sense of manhood as medicine, theology, and personal sense of man, he opens up a wonderful picture which has nothing really negative in it, but it is as if the revelator would be a good practitioner who would say to a patient who comes to him with the 13th chapter, the patient comes to him and says, look here, I am sick, what can I do? Look here, I am a sinner, theology says, I am a sinner, therefore I am sick, what can I do? He comes to you as a mortal, as a 666, and says, here am I, what can I do? And the next chapter, 14, is the practitioner that tells to him, well, turn away completely from that mortal picture, and turn around and look into the true picture of manhood. And so he shows him the true picture of manhood. A wonderful sense that we can give to a patient and say, look here, the true sense of you is what? And so a lamb stood on the Mount Zion. Can you see that's something very different than the beast? The beast with the number 666, here the very opposite symbol of a lamb. Well, we know the Lamb of God, as Mrs. Eddy describes it, defines it in the glossary, is the spiritual idea of love. She also defines it as self-immolation, innocence and purity, sacrifice. So let's see, he saw a lamb, therefore the spiritual idea of love, standing on Mount Zion, and Mount Zion is interpreted in the glossary as spiritual foundation and superstructure. So here we see, turn around, you 666, turn around and look into the immensity of love, into the Lamb, and see that love has always an idea, and that only that spiritual idea is your true foundation, is your Zion. That is your foundation on which to stand. Can you see the complete opposite of chapter 13? How's that start? Where I said, and I stood on the sand of the sea. Now, a lamb stood on Mount Zion. I think it's very clear what he's going to show. That he says, all right, take another standpoint. So a lamb stood on the Mount Zion, and with him 144,000. 144 is 12 times 12. It is a great demonstration of manhood. And everyone wants to bring out manhood in its demonstration. They took the 12 times 12, 144. And if it's a great measure of manhood, then it's 1,000. So it's 144,000. And that those 144,000 had his father's name written on their forehead. Can you see, before it was that on their forehead was the 666. Now it's another number written on the forehead of the spiritual idea man. Namely, the father's name was written on their forehead, on their consciousness. And I heard a voice of harpers, and they sang, and they sung, as it were, a new song. They had in their consciousness, in that 144,000, they had really quite a different theme. And they sang a new song before the throne, before the four beasts, and the elders. Can you see, he blends back. Can you say blending back? To the first vision of principle, where he was showing one is sitting on the throne, and there were four beasts there, and there were the 24 elders. He takes the same picture as in the vision of principle and says, now they began to sing that song. At the vision of principle, they didn't sing a song yet, because the book was still closed, was sealed. But now it is open, so we can know now that principle of divine metaphysics, and therefore we can sing a completely new song. You know how Mrs. Eddy says, science vast, the song of song. That's the new song, that's the new melody. When we are beginning to hear the melody of the categorized of the capitalized terms in their categories, when that song is sung of the infinite calculus of those three great categories of being, the seven and the four and the four, then we begin to listen to the new melody, to the new music, and we sing a new song of science vast. And no man could learn that song, but 144,000. That song cannot be learned except for by those which were redeemed from the earth, that left the standpoint of being an inhabitor of the earth and of the sea, and is no more standing on the sand of the sea, and has left that standpoint. Therefore, only those who have gone over the 3.5 and have taken a standpoint of principle of the foundation of Zion, only those can really learn that song. Else we cannot learn that song. These were they, for they are without fault before the throne of God. Then we come to the next subject, where this Christianity is now shown in its science, where we have, so to say, a picture of the sign to show that Christianity as science shows now the nothingness of error. And that's terrific. See, he has given the vision. He has said in the Christianity as the Word, the 12th chapter, the Revelator gives the vision. He says, look here, the vision is that there is a woman in heaven and clothed with the sun, and the moon under her feet, and the 12 stars upon her head in the crown. It is the divine idea, the woman, the divine idea that is far above matter, above the sun, above the moon, that is ever operative, 12 stars, that is ever operative. So he gives the vision. Then he shows in Christianity as the Christ that there is no other salvation, that it is, would be wrong to think that there is another way of saving ourselves, namely through medicine and theology and personal sense, through the beast of the sea and the beast of the earth and the mark on the head of the beast 666. That doesn't lead anywhere. So you better turn around, Christianity as Christianity, you better turn around and begin to see what is the right standpoint. And I saw a lamb standing on Mount Zion. And that standpoint tells us that there we find our true manhood, the 144,000. We find that true manhood if, as he says, we are faithful to the Word and to the Christ, and that we are free. What was his learning? Yeah. And that they were without fault before the throne of God. So that we make up our mind to go to God, go out from God. Can you see? He gives now the metaphysical approach, the metaphysical way of how we could ever touch really that woman's sense. But now, having given an advice how we should turn around and turn to the right standpoint, to the Lamb on Mount Zion, he gives him the science of handling evil. He gives him the science of how now that evil can be destroyed. So it's no more really the idea of the woman that has within itself the Christ idea and operates and casts out the dragon. Now it is really showing what is our attitude if we try to solve that problem in a metaphysical way. And so he gives a sevenfold picture of how we make nothing of error. Or let's say what we always saw in Christianity, how we can trace back error to nothingness, to its self-destruction. And this is a sevenfold picture that he gives again in the Christianity order, as if he would say, I have presented to you in the 12th chapter the vision of the woman in the Christianity order, and now if you don't accept that, if you want to stand on another basis, if you don't be able to take that view, I tell you how you can solve that question on a metaphysical basis. And we come here to a very interesting subject, a most interesting subject. And so we take it a bit step by step, and I just read you tell you the main points. I don't think that we have to read the Bible itself, but instead that it is speaking about the woman, as in chapter 12, he speaks now again about the angels, about seven angels, again about scientific thought, scientific thinking. So that he says, if you can't take the right attitude of principle with its infinite idea, all right, then I show you the metaphysical way of dealing with a situation until you are ready. So the Christianity order runs again, principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, and love. How does the Revelator depict principle? And you can see at once that he depicts principle. And I saw another angel flying in the midst of heaven. The moment you have the midst, it's always principle, because principle is in the midst of the world order. On both sides, three synonymous terms, and in the midst is principle, preaching the everlasting gospel. Principle always interprets the signs of being. So preaching the everlasting gospel, preaching the everlasting story, really of the chain of scientific being. What does he preach at this point? You know, at this point he must preach something to show the nothingness of error. He must preach now through the Christianity order why error is nothing. Or, as we said, Christianity is that which traces all evil back to nothingness. So he begins to tell that if we go out from principle and have a sense of principle, now begin to interpret the principle, that then we see what? Then instead of seeing in mind all ideas and only ideas, he shows Babylon is fallen. Babylon is always standing for, as a symbol for material knowledge instead of the knowledge of the divine mind, and says material knowledge is nothing. So he reduces material knowledge back to nothing. Babylon is fallen. So preaching that everlasting gospel, interpreting the principle, he has to show the nothingness of material knowledge, mind. Babylon is fallen. Then he shows through soul that really the fires of soul burn up sin, so that shows that sin is a nothing, that sin is not something that can stand, but that it is burnt up. He shows it like this and says, the third angel follows, saying, if any man worship the beast and receives the mark of his name, can you see the mark of his name, the identity of the beast, shall drink of the wine of wrath of God. Now we come always to the wrath of God, and it doesn't leave us until through the seven vials, then in the vision of soul, the wrath of God has been drunk to the dregs and seen to be nothing. So here he starts out and says, what what that principle who is interpreting the everlasting gospel shows is that material knowledge, Babylon, is nothing. And that seems to be for material sense as the wrath of God taking away really mortal mind and the knowledge of mortal mind. And so they drink of the wine of the wrath of God. And he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone. You can see how error is being resolved and resolved through the fires of soul. Whereas the saints keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. He wants to show here, yes, saints and sinners receive their reward sooner or later. Namely, the saints keep the commandments of the God and are saved, whereas the sinner will be burnt up, or sin will be burnt up like through fire and brimstone until it is seen as nothing. So reducing sin to nothingness. So that's what we see here constantly, that everything opposite of God is reduced to nothingness. We come to the tone of spirit. And I heard a voice from heaven saying, blessed are the dead which die in the Lord from henceforth. Those that die in the Lord are those that die of the things of the flesh. And I looked and behold a white cloud, spirit, a white cloud. But it's still only a cloud. And up on the cloud one set like unto the Son of Man. So one begins to see in white the purity of the Son of Man, but he has in his hand a sharp sickle, the order of spirit, with which he can separate and can say what has to be destroyed and what has to be saved. Huh? It's always the same as with that wonderful parable of Jesus, that we should let the tares and the wheat grow side by side until the third day, when it is clearly shown what is good and what is evil. Then we can gather and cut down the tares and burn it, and can gather the wheat into the barns. Here is going to show the very same thing. That the Son of Man, that with that scientific consciousness, we can have the sickle of spirit, we can truly separate, so that we are not going to destroy that which is good, or to save that which is evil, that we have a clear-cut distinction between good and evil. And then, with that angel, with that sickle, that Son of Man, with a sickle, is now showing forth what that sickle can do. And we have three further synonymous terms that all turn around that sickle. See, the sickle is always that which cuts down and can therefore destroy that which is false and can gather that which is good. And here we come to an interesting point. Namely, the following three aspects of the sickle have all to do with the temple. The temple gathers now more importance. And the temple, as you know, Mrs. Eddy defines, and we have to keep that a little bit in our mind, she defines the temple as the idea of life, substance, intelligence, further as the superstructure of truth, and further as the shrine of love. So you get really a sense of the temple, that the temple is not really a very high symbol. It is not a symbol for life, truth, and love, but it's only a symbol for the idea of life, for the superstructure of truth, and for the shrine of love. They only show really the outcome of the synonymous term. The temple worships the demonstration of the synonymous term, the outcome, the visible signs of the synonymous terms, not the synonymous term themselves. That is the church. The church is always defined through synonymous terms and not through the idea of life or superstructure of truth or shrine of love. It's typically the demonstration of the metaphysical idea of life, truth, and love, not the thing itself, not life itself, not truth itself, not love itself. And therefore, we can see here at this point that they are interested in the way of how to demonstrate the idea of life, truth, and love. In life, it says very clearly, you can see the tone of life, and another angel came out of the temple, crying, "Thrust in the sickle and reap, for the time is come for thee to reap, for the harvest of the earth is ripe." See, the fullness of life is always there. Reap it. Reap the fullness of life. The time is always ripe. You get the tone of truth. And another angel came out of the temple, which is in heaven, he also having a sharp sickle. Before he just had a sickle in life, now it's a sharp sickle, because truth is that which uses spirit to separate. It is that which destroys then, when it is separated, what is wrong and saves what is right. And the love says, and another angel came out from the altar. The altar naturally was in the temple, which had power over the fire. Fire was a symbol of fear. So love had power over fear, made fear to be nothing, and thrust in the sharp sickle, for the grapes are fully ripe. And now listen what's coming. And gather the wine of the earth. It gathers the wine of the earth. It doesn't gather the wine of inspiration, but of the false sense of inspiration of the earth, and cast it into the grain winepress of the wrath of God. And you can see that all that error is cast into the winepress of the wrath of God, where it is being self-destroyed, the self-destruction of error. And the winepress was trodden without the city, outside the city, not in the city. Error destroying itself is something that does not happen within the city, but without the city, and blood came out of the space, came out by the space of 1,600 furlongs. So here again it shows that this whole method is going to build up the whole thing to the point of love, where everything is thrown into the winepress of the wrath of God. The wrath of God was always a rendering for that if we meet error with error, if we try to meet error with error, it's a tilling the soil, that also brings error self-destruction. That error destroys itself. So that he says, if ever you try to go out from a wrong basis, from the sand of the sea, and you use the wrong method, then the synonymous term will work on that situation, and will work on that situation until finally everything is in the winepress of the wrath of God, and that is trodden without the city, that destroys itself. That has no place within being. Yeah.